podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
Come on, Chutney.
Hello and welcome to episode 15, season 12 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Today on the show, we've got Felonious Filth.
Hello, hello.
Hello, T. And we've got the Thespian Lesbian, Mark Nesbitt.
Hello. Where's that? What?
I don't know. Ricky described you on Saturday as you're having the look of a butcher from the Netherlands in the 1970s. I get it. I don't know what it means, but Dutch
1970s butcher.
Yeah, it goes to a drama school strictly for lesbians. That's Mark's look, fundamentally. Anyway, welcome, gentlemen. How have you been since we saw each other on Saturday at the game? Everything going well?
I was telling Mark that it was a bit of a blow after the game. I had had a drink in a drink at Beaver Town, then went Beehive, then went KFC, then got a train, then ate Subway, then went to bed.
You had a KFC and a Subway?
Yeah, and I half watched the Clarissa Shields Marshall fight, and
on that quickly, that was, you know, it was most watched female boxing match in the UK in history. 2 million
That's
people
good.
Watched it. Yeah, it's good. It's progressive. Great.
That's
fight.
Good, you know, hopefully there'll be another decent all-women card in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of food and football, so I had a bit of an experience, and it's a shame because I wanted to get Ricky and Spook on this pod to talk about it. I was arriving at the Tottenham later than them, and they plotted up in this calf, the Enjoy calf on Tottenham High Road. And I walked in there, and I'm not super keen on eating loads before you drink. Anyway, I got in there, Ricky and Spooky have got the biggest fry-ups I've ever seen. It was like they had two fry-ups each. It was on one plate, but effectively there was enough food to feed four people, and they were just sitting there. Spooky had all of that food and went, can I have chips on top? Ricky said, I'll be fine because I've taken the free hash browns off, but I have ordered extra fried bread. So I felt like I had to eat, and it ruined it, because I was like 5 pints in by the time the pod the game came around, and just wasn't pissed at all. I hated them. I absolutely hated them, sitting there with all that fucking food. Anyway, they're going to explain their actions in coming episodes. Thanks for your input there, boys. It's good.
I think we could ask what our pre-match rituals were.
Well, all right, go on then.
There's a bit of a pregnant pause.
If I leave a pregnant pause, fill it with dick.
Dick and balls and shaft and everything.
Yeah.
But the ritual I had, which probably isn't that exciting, is that I would drink a small, I think it's a 10cl bottle of Martell on the way to the game. It would always keep me warm in the winter. It's probably a size above a miniature. That would always do me fine. I'm not going to the cafe with Ricky, but you've kind of sold it to me, Flav. So I think.
But it's madness. If you're going on and going to the game, you don't want to be full of fucking food. It's such greasy food. And it wasn't just us in there. This place was rammed. And the standard of the food was pretty good. It's very quick. I'd recommend, if you want food before a game, go to the Enjoy Cafe on Tottenham High Road. But it was just madness. I kept looking at Ricky and he was just shoveling food into his mouth. And I'm like, how are you going to get through this day? We got to the pub. We sat there. And none of us could speak, let alone drink our beer, because we were so fucking full. It was ridiculous.
I have to say, go on.
No, go on.
I'd say when I got to the pub, you guys were like, you looked flat.
Yeah, like, we were flat.
Full of fucking carbs.
We used
like,
all
just of, sat there like feeling a bit sad.
We've used all of our joyous moments, all the best bit of the day up on 15 minutes of eating the biggest fry ups I've ever seen in my life. We got round it though, but it was a bit of a sort of ruined the experience for me because I like to go into the game very tipsy, not pissed but tipsy. Anyway, we got there in the end, but it made me think about what people's pre-game rituals are. So we want your pre-game rituals, and the best ones we'll read out on the pod next week or towards the end of this week. I think we'll do another one after the Manchester United game. Yeah, what are your pre-game rituals? What do you and your boys and girls get up to? The weirder the better, but anything that springs to mind, email us at flav@thefightingcock.co.uk. So usually when we do a NordVPN read, because NordVPN are backing the Fighting Cock in a big way, and we love them for it, we'll get them to we might previously explain what we've got up to and the naughty things you can get up to with NordVPN. NordVPN, by the way, fundamentally is a security program, right? It protects your computer, but you can do so much with it, and which makes it very, very useful. But this blew my mind. The guy Jake at NordVPN, we chat every week, and he told me this. This will blow your mind. If you have NordVPN already, you can do this immediately. And if you don't have NordVPN, you can sign up by going to nordvpn.com/fightingcock. You get a huge discount. 4 months free if you pay for a year up front. It's completely risk-free. You get 30-day back money guarantee. Now listen to this. Do not skip this. Do you remember Setanta Sports? You remember the Irish sports? They had the Premier League rights for a while and they collapsed? Do you remember that, boys?
I remember them very well.
Yeah.
Yep.
They don't. They didn't collapse. They moved to Moldova, right? They are, for listen to this, £3.49 a month. You can get Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, Eredivisie, Scottish Premier League, NASCAR, World Tennis Association, European Golf Tour. I don't know why this has come like eighth in the list, but Champions League, Europa League, and UFC. The commentary is in English. And it's been tested, and it's absolutely runs like a dream. Essentially, you're tapping into Setanta Sports in Moldova for £3.49 a month. Like, that is mental. That's how many times could you fit £3.49 in a single bill that you get from Sky? You're paying over £100, and you might think there's nothing illegal about this. You're not doing anything wrong. You're simply utilising the internet and NordVPN. And just to explain how it works, because some people might get confused, it's the most simple thing in the world. You get a map of the world, and there's dots in different countries. All you need to do is find Moldova, click on it, and then use the internet to access Setanta in Moldova. It's really easy to sign up. It costs £3.49. If you bin Sky and just have this, you're actually saving money. You're making money that you would otherwise spend on Sky and BT Sports and whatnot. Madness. Absolute madness. So we don't even need to do a silly, funny thing. That's just good enough on its own. So sign up at nordvpn.com/fightingcock and get all of the sport, all of the time, for £3.49 a month. Like, you're mad if you don't do that.
Get on it.
Get on it. Mark.
Do it. Yo.
Who knows more about football, me or you?
Well, you didn't sign a contract last month, so
be honest.
On this, it's now in my contract. I'm contractually obliged to say that you know more about football than I do. But I think the people know, Flav. The people know. So
I think
put it to the people.
I think there's an assumption out there.
We should write you at flav@thefightingcock.
There's an assumption out there that I don't know much about football because of all the things I've said in the thousands of hours we've recorded. But I think, Mark, you know, you lord around the thing, I know about football. I've read a few websites before going on a podcast, so I know what I'm talking about. The reality is, I knew that the 3-5-2 was better for Tottenham before you did. You're coming round.
Cool. You said 5-3-2.
Sometimes it is a 5-3-2. It's very fluid. It's very fluid. Very fluid formation. Off the ball, 5-3-2. On the ball, 3-4-3-5-2. So, you know, don't worry about that. That was just a mistake. I was pissed and I sent you a message gloating and got the numbers the wrong way around. But there was a sudden change, wasn't there, Mark, in this game against Everton when Richarlison went off, and obviously we were forced to switch to a 3-5-2 because we had no other forwards and Lucas Moura wasn't ready.
We just look better.
We started creating chances. It's a defensive formation, isn't it? But we started.
Well, it is, but it isn't. Like, it depends how you use it.
I knew that.
You were going to say that, and I rudely cut you off. I knew you were going to say that because you know more about football than me. But it can be adapted to be very offensive. I mean, we saw that in large phases where all of a sudden you see players like, you know, Højbjerg, Bentancur, even Romero got very involved in the offensive phases. So it can be. I mean, you saw as well, because we've got more control in midfield, our wing backs can push up so much higher. So it can be utilized in a more offensive way. If you want it to just sit on midfield and choke out the other team and just hold possession, you could do that too. Your wing backs just need to be a little bit further back so that, you know, there's not you don't leave too many gaps. But yeah, I mean it's a great formation. My only worry with it so far had been around creativity and ball progression through the middle, because I wasn't 100% convinced, you know, Højbjerg Bentancur with Bissouma in the more of a deep lying six was going to be all that great, but actually it's kind of coming up trumps. So
yeah,
I was wrong again.
Yeah, and I was right.
What
did you make of the performance overall?
I thought it was workmanlike. It was professional. I mean, this week was probably the first time I've watched Spurs live in well over a month, and Bentancur is just a fucking giant. Just a wonderful, wonderful player. There's lots of good individual performances. I don't think we were in danger of losing the game. I think Everton had 0.0 XG in the second half, which just showed how
registered a single...
much we nullified the minimal threat that they did offer. So I was happy with the win. I think, as ever, we're always going to have people who would rather be in the side. I mean, I love Perisic, but I do like us obsessing on their force, obsessing on offers a lot more than Perisic does. But he's given everyone minutes, given everyone their time. And also, I think, you know, Conte has waxed lyrical about Matt Doherty after the game. Gave him a big, massive hug when he subbed him off. You know, Jed Spencer had a couple of minutes. But I was very happy. And it just dawned on me, we've got 100% home record. Didn't realise that.
We've won 10 games on the bounce in all competitions and 8 in the league.
That's mental. It's amazing. I mean, we've talked about making a new stadium a fortress, and I think Conte is starting to make that happen now.
Yeah, for sure. The most pleasing part of it was that, in the first half, Everton was such... You know, they legitimately turned into a good defensive unit and under Lampard this season. Was it before this game? I think it was the second best defence in the Premier League.
It was
always going to be difficult. It was like watching, and we talked about this on the Five Statements review pod that we did behind the Patreon paywall, and about, you know, Everton looking more like Burnley than any other, and obviously with Tarkowski at the back and the blocks that they were throwing in, and just being really dogged in midfield. It was very frustrating in the first half. And there were sort of people moaning in the crowd, and I get it, because you're kind of watching and you think, all right, well, we've been a little bit stagnant in the way we approach the way we attack in this season thus far, and it kind of felt like it was playing out again. But in the second half, and if you look across the board, we had chances, and in the second half especially, we just came into our own. And obviously after Kane scoring the penalty, meant that Everton were going to have to come out a little bit, and they did. They did try to be a little bit more progressive. But what was beautiful about it, and this is what Conte warns about and has been warning us about pretty much since he turned up, which is we need to control the games. We need to have influence over every moment of the game. And large, almost 95% of this game we did have. And never was it more evident than when we'd scored and we seemed to control the ball for what felt like about 20 minutes. Like, we lost it, but got it back and got it under control, and really frustrated and took any sting from an Everton reaction out. It was just wonderful to see such control. And with that extra man in midfield, Bissouma, it made it seem much more easier than it actually was. It's difficult on Premier League level, Mark, to control the game against any team.
Yeah, it's there are no easy gimmies in the Prem anymore. I mean, you know, even up against teams that are performing pretty badly at the moment. I mean, you know, we're still still in the back of our minds, not just because we're Spurs fans, that we come up against, even when we come up against smaller teams, that we could struggle. So yeah, but you're right. I mean, we did look a lot more in control. One thing I thought, and I don't know if you guys noticed this or if I'm just making it up with my happy clapper ginger eyes, but it also looked like, not just as fans, but the players looked more comfortable in the 3-5-2. They just looked a bit more confident and like trying a few more things. But I don't know. And like Kane as well. I thought this was Kane's best goal, best game of the season so far. So, and it kind of, he didn't have to drop back so much. He didn't have to work so hard defensively. I really think, I mean, I'm really coming around to the 3-5-2 and the increased confidence it gives us as fans, but as players as well, I feel like it feels like they prefer it. And yeah. They're almost like they've been training for the 3-5-2 rather than training for the 3-4-3.
As soon as Richarlison hobbled off, and let's talk about him potentially might even be, he's, World Cup might even be in doubt. So I'm not sure what his injury is, but his role is crucial. I mean, every player's role is crucial, but when he's not performing, essentially our attack in the 3-4-3 this Saturday was failing by 30%. Like Richarlison's performance was poor. It was poor. He had one opportunity where he broke across and hit a shot and it got blocked, which looked like it was going in. But for whatever reason, he was having a poor game. Maybe the reason is that, you know, he isn't a right forward. He's very much a left-sided or a number nine. And you're asking him to do a job that he's uncomfortable with. And it showed against Everton that something wasn't right. And when he got injured, to me, in that moment, it was forced, the formation change. And suddenly, as soon as it happened, and this isn't a slight at Richarlison, it was just like the system change seemed to suit us, like you said. And like you mentioned about the wing-backs. Like, it was something I noticed. When you're in the ground, it's like looking at the pitch. It's very different from looking for obvious reasons, the TV broadcast, when you can see everything all the time. The width that we had with Perisic and Doherty, especially on that right-hand side, it was unreal. It was so forward. It reminded me a little bit at times, they were so far forward, of that Pochettino, that famous win against Steve Bruce's Aston Villa, where the two furthest forward players were our wing-backs in Danny Rose and Kyle Walker. It had that kind of feel to it because they were giving up position and we just created so much width, which pulled Everton's back line, which was really disciplined. They were forced to deal with the full-backs when they hadn't had to do that with the 3-4-3. The wing-backs rather. So it gave us new options. So if Kane or Son wasn't available, then it would go wide. And what Doherty did so well and why he got so many plaudits was he used the ball fantastically. Certainly his carrying and the way he, you know, almost glided past players meant that they had to suddenly really worry about Matt Doherty, which isn't something I'd imagine they were that caught up on before the game. Like his performance...
Yeah, he played quite well.
It was just... Not only did he not lose it, it wasn't. He wasn't just economical. He was actually damaging. He was hurting them every time he went forward. Looked like the player last year.
Is that the first Conte game you've seen in the flesh?
It might be, I haven't been for the last game I went to. Yeah, it would have been, because the last game I went to was the Chelsea game, Nuno. I've got to say, what a fucking ball late that was.
What did you make of it? Because obviously you wouldn't have seen Bentancur before, for example. So, what did you make of it, seeing it in the flesh for the first time?
I think it's different. Like, I mean, I've gone to over 1,000 football games in my life, right? So I know what it's like to be there and watch it live in the stadium. But I've got so used to watching it on telly that it's almost like watching a different game. Certainly if you're near bottom of the pitch. Bentancur less so, because the camera's always focused on pretty much on the centre of the pitch. So you see Højbjerg and Bentancur. But it was the width, the move, the system that you could see that that Conte was playing was much more evident when you're there. I really did enjoy being back, actually. Like, it's such a weird thing to not go to Spurs as often as I used to. And I really enjoyed, you remember how important around the game is as opposed to just the game itself, and seeing everyone and meeting everyone. It was just, it was wonderful to be back there, really. And I do miss it. I'd say 9 hours travelling on that day to be at the ground and full of chips and fry up. And I had to leave 10 minutes before the end, missed the Højbjerg goal because it was the only way I was going to get my train. So that's not the going to Spurs that I grew up doing. So it's Yeah, I might have to move the family to London. Just so I start going to Spurs. But yeah, no, he's Bentancur is a class act, man. Like, I was convinced that Kulusevski was the ace card out of both of them, and Bentancur was bought in because we needed bodies in midfield, and he's a good player and he's competent. I can't decide who's the better signing, and that's a wonderful position to be in. Who do you think is the better signing, Mark?
I think it will still turn out to be Kulusevski, but I think you're right. Do you know what? I don't think the club was a million miles away in their estimation to you of Bentancur. I think we did need depth. I think that's kind of, that is why we bought him, and we knew there was potential there. The fact he's just had this massive glow up, it's a huge bonus for us. And I mean, Conte does improve players, so there is that. But yeah, I think it'll still be Kulusevski. I think Kulusevski's ceiling is huge. Mm. This injury is, you know, it's not going to be a major setback. We are missing him, but I think we maybe have. Potentially, if we even made a little bit too much of how we miss him, it's just in the 3-4-3. Yeah, we miss him, but yeah. We revert to a 3-5-2. All of a sudden, we've got other options. So
more of that in a bit. Let's talk about Højbjerg then, because he's imperious again. A player who you've had to defend, Mark, as a fellow national. But it can't be denied how important he is. T, how crucial do you think he is to Tottenham? How much would we miss him if he wasn't there? Both for his leadership and being that guy in the centre midfield, but also the quality that he brings. Because I think he's underrated by Spurs fans and the wider fan base, football fan base.
He is underrated, but anyone who does that job is going to be underappreciated. It's not as silky on the ball as Bentancur. You know, he's not. He doesn't necessarily beat players like Dembele did, you know, many years ago. But he's kind of the glue that holds a lot of it together, and he's added goals to his game. Important goals like that. I mean, the Chelsea goal, for example, was, you know, a massively important goal in the context of the game and probably the season, because, you know, we're on this good run and Chelsea are a tough away day, and he never shirks. Even if Spurs are having a bad game, he never shirks responsibility. So, last week, I think I was kind of damning the faint praise that he's one of our better players, but he has been, and he stepped up, and Conte likes him. He's Conte on the pitch, and he's one of these people who can do everything. He doesn't do one thing amazingly. There's everything to probably 75-80%.
Yeah.
And that's the value of having him there. You know, he's not one of these guys who's, I don't know, super quick or amazing attack. He's just one of these people who does all of the things that Bentancur does to a good level, whereas Bentancur might be weak in some other parts, you know. And
the irony of these is his passing stats, his attacking passing stats, are better than Bentancur's.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. Højbjerg is an underrated passer as well. Got to give him his props for that. And yeah, I think it's been a lovely season for him.
He strikes me a man as who does two big poos a day.
Yeah, I reckon he probably has. I reckon he probably eats crisps while he does it as well.
He just sits on there as a bag of salt and vinegar Walkers.
Yeah, I reckon maybe kettle chips.
A very consistent poos, though.
Yeah.
Like, very, like, healthy. You know, like, the right, yeah, absolutely, right colour, the right sort of consistency.
Højbjerg has never had to wipe.
Smell too much.
He's never had to wipe once in his life, no. Højbjerg. It's just clean in and out. Not in and out.
Yeah.
Out. Although you don't know. How many Premier League clubs, this is a question from Gallo on Twitter, he says, how many Premier League clubs does Højbjerg walk directly into? It's a good question. Does he get into Newcastle's midfield?
What? Of course he does. He gets into every... The only player, the only DM better than him in the league right now is Rodri at City.
He doesn't get... Like I know with Spurs and whatnot, but... currently, he doesn't get into Arsenal's midfield, does he?
Of course he does.
In front of who?
Who? What, Lukonga? Xhaka?
No. Yeah, Xhaka and Partey. I doubt he gets.
He's better than both of them. Thiago Alcantara, maybe on his day, he's not playing very well this season, and while he's been injured and Liverpool shit and da-da-da. But right now, on current form, the only DM better than him in the league. There's other, you know, attacking midfielders that will put out
but
his stats and a silky on the ball. Defensive midfielder wise,
Rodri,
he's the second best in the league after Rodri.
Fuck, that is a
second best in the league.
Would you agree?
Second best.
Like this, Mark is saying that he would walk into every team bar
team,
City.
They've got Rodri.
I love it. I love it.
I'm going to play alongside Rodri.
Come on. Rodri is a step above. He's amazing.
What do you make of that statement? Is he far on?
It's wild, but you know, unlike Mark and yourself, I don't watch other teams that closely to really go against him. But it does sound weird him saying that he walks into every team. I mean, apparently N'Golo Kanté is made of glass, and Chelsea don't really want him, so can't really say that name anymore. But it's not a position that's rich in talent in the Premier League, to be fair. Now I really think about it, I don't think any of the current mob will make an all-time Premier League side. So maybe he is the second best. There's no Yaya Touré. There's no Vieira, I dare say. So
I love it.
Maybe he is.
What did you make of that story that broke a couple of weeks ago that Kanté has been offered around, including to Tottenham? Would you take him, Mark?
It's a tough one because Kanté is. I mean, he was not just one of the world's, you know, best defensive midfielders. He's one of the world's best midfielders. He was absolutely imperious sort of 3 or 4 years ago, and I think there's still. I mean, there's a little bit of a Perisic kind of vibe around him where he's an still if he stays fit, he's an exceptionally good footballer. I mean, it depends on how much he costs. I think he's one of the three or four highest paid players at Chelsea. So it would need to be financially needs to be the right deal. But footballing wise, if it was the right deal, he's a brilliant player and we should definitely look at him. And he's not like, there's none of this Chelsea bullshit around him. That doesn't come into it with him.
Stick with Skip. See what he can do. Skippy. The other thing that came out today was that Bonucci has asked to leave Juve in January, and that Spurs are looking at him. 35-year-old Bonucci, by the way, this is a man who I had a dream about a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure I mentioned this on the podcast. I had a dream that was in a five-a-side pitch and Bonucci and Chiellini were there, and I really love Chiellini. Like, I know he's a bit of a, like, he winds people up, but I think he's an amazing player. He's been incredible. And I said to him in my dream that you're my favourite player ever, which he isn't. That would be so weird. But and I said to Chiellini, yeah, you're my favourite player. And he was so overjoyed the fact that I was his favourite player that he decided that we were going to have a 2v2 on a five-a-side pitch. Me and Chiellini to Bonucci and this TikTok influencer called Cal the Dragon. I don't know what he was doing in my dream. He's like this kid who's like autistic who plays football with himself in the garden. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I megged Bonucci and scored. And for that reason, I don't think he's good enough for Spurs. Would you take Bonucci?
That says it all.
Is 35 too old? Is he too long in the tooth for the Premier League? Because even Romero come out today saying the Premier League is different football to what's played in Serie A.
But you know, you look at Thiago Silva, who's doing bits in the Premier League. Maybe it's possible. Now maybe Bonucci's on that kind of Conor Benn IVF shit that keeps him, like, preserves him. So yeah, you know, if the top brass at Tottenham think that Bonucci can do a job, I'm for it. I mean,
yeah, if Conte wants him, get him.
I'll probably think that none of us really want to see Sanchez or Tanganga turn out for Spurs next season, and if the alternative is getting an experienced player in Bonucci and someone who can probably coach younger defenders as well, then it's not the worst move in the world.
Yeah, Perisic has done wonders with Sessegnon thus far.
Here he has.
Mark,
yo.
What do you make of the pundits in Korea blaming Perisic for Son's poor form?
I saw this. I'll admit there is some stats-wise, you can, you know, I think it's been a lot of games where it does seem like that pairing hasn't really worked. But I haven't seen anything you know, I go to all the home games, go to wherever away games I can go to, although I haven't been to any this season. Like, I haven't seen any of it. It seems a bit like me when I'm saying, you know, Højbjerg is the best player in the world. Maybe they're looking after their own.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they do not give a shit about Tottenham. I appreciate it. They're very much following the most famous person in their entire country. Son, if it is the case, needs to adapt, and it's about time, isn't it? It's not like Son's kicking off. I don't want to play with Perisic. It may be a worthwhile conversation to be had, but I actually thought in the first half against Everton that we were most dangerous when those two were on the ball exchanging play on the left-hand side. And Perisic is such a threat with the ball. Not that he doesn't need to take, and he probably can't take, you know, young Premier League fullbacks on anymore, but he doesn't need to because his delivery is delicious. And you know, Son had opportunities in this game. He could have bagged. That follow up to the Kane volley, which Pickford saved, and it came out to Son, and he put it over. That was a good chance. That wasn't nothing to do with Perisic. His five goals this year have come from two games where Sessegnon started. But you know, just give it to what they're saying. Like, just bin off. Yeah, Perisic.
They're not all assists from Sessegnon. Like, no. It's not like Sessegnon is having this impact. Like, you know, I can see the argument that there might potentially be a bit of overlap in the half space on the left wing, because that's where, you know, that's where Son likes to sort of sit and receive and run into space and all that sort of stuff. And Perisic does like to push up there and is the kind of wing back that we were screaming for on the left, that we already have when Doherty's playing well. He already does that on the right. So they're a good partnership in that sort of sense. Space-wise, yeah, okay, but you've got a player like Son who's elite at finding space and elite at running at defenders. At some point, it's going to click with Perisic, who's elite at finding space and you know, crossing medium and long-range passing is up there as well. So I think it's a stats-wise, I think it's a coincidence. I haven't seen anything in the flesh for it. Yeah, I think it's an overreaction.
Let's move on to Conte. That was actually, by the way, our best ever start in the Premier League era. 10 games on the bounce, winning at home. Unreal stuff. And you know, perhaps we haven't even clicked into gear yet. Who knows? But things are looking very rosy. And because of that, it's mooted that a new contract is going to be offered to Conte, and they're in talks currently about what that might look like. That's right now is really positive stuff, isn't it, T? It's like we're doing well, things are going well, and combined with that, Harry Kane is also apparently, according to these reports, Alistair Gold reported it, so it's not from like some sort of weird little twatty website run from some kid in his bedroom. I don't know why I said twatty there. It's unnecessary. But yeah, so this is a legitimate source that Kane is open to a new contract at Tottenham, as is Conte. What does that mean? Because at the end of the season, he could leave. There is another year option on the table. What's interesting, T, is that the conversation and the way Conte's been talking about multiple transfer windows, about playing for the future, about using players in the right way to give them an opportunity, signing the guy from Udinese, I forget how to pronounce his name, but you know, players that Conte rates, but you know, is a kind of project. But yeah, what do you make of that the noise?
It feels like Conte can see his medium-term future, not to say long-term, at Tottenham, and that's good to see. When Pep Guardiola first joined Man City, he was someone who was only at clubs for two or three seasons. He's been at Man City for about 7-8 years now, so it's possible that managers who move around a lot can find a home and find a niche, and I feel that this is a big enough project for Conte to, you know what, to crack the code. He's not as warm and lovable as Pochettino is, but the players respond to Conte in the same way that they respond to Pochettino.
That's a good point. While I remember, T, if you compare them both, like Conte and Pochettino, in terms of your affection, like how and how they make you, like, You know, how do you feel about them being your manager? Like, how do you place them together? How close to Conte is Pochettino? Sorry, the other way around. How close to Pochettino is Conte?
He's close. He's close. I mean, I feel that what Pochettino got us from to what he ended up leaving Spurs as being, you know, a Champions League finalist, a regular top four outfit, he completely changed the face of the club in that point of view. I mean, I'm not going to overlook what Martin Jol did or Redknapp. They did great work beforehand, but Pochettino kind of took what they did and made us a really credible football club and, you know, helped, you know, build us a stadium and give us that credibility. But it feels like Conte might be, you know, the Phil Jackson to Pochettino, Doug Collins.
What does that mean? I don't know what
the Bob Paisley to Pochettino's Bill Shankly, you know, busting out the names. So,
oh, is it basketball?
You knew it was basketball, Mark.
Never fucking do that again.
Don't keep doing it.
No, you fucking won't. That basketball's not even a sport. It's a game.
I don't care. I don't care about this. I mean, what
if I was into rugby league and I was just doing rugby league references and no one would get them?
Yeah, because you know what? There's this meme I've seen, right, where that one person likes all of your Instagram posts. So you're kind of like a pulpit and there's one person in the crowd just like with their arm up. So if there's one person listening to this who likes the NBA, but hey, you reference 1980 Chicago Bulls. I remember them. I remember when Charles Oakley left and Scottie Pippen came in and they revolutionised the whole team, you know?
Just stop. Just stop.
I'm going to land my point now, but I feel that Conte wouldn't exist without Pochettino, so it's not worth playing them both off against each other. I love Conte. I love what he's got to say. He's fairly straightforward. He's a stepdad. He's a disciplinarian, you know? Conte is the sort of person who just puts a strap on the table, not a gun, a belt on a table. It says, you know what? Mate, you got a B minus, mate. Turn it in.
Yeah, we need.
And that's all he's got to say.
If we needed to be checked, I think we needed Conte in our lives. Like we
turned 13 when Conte arrived. We're like teenagers. Pochettino is about 8-9 years old. Then we put on a bit of, you know, Thundermans or fucking, I don't know, Powerpuff Girls, whatever the fuck 8-year-olds watch. But Conte is like, you know, I've got the Financial Times at the Economist out. Says, you know what, mate, you're gonna turn into a man now.
Yeah.
And if you get anything less than an A+, you're gonna fucking die. Well,
we're sitting down watching, you know, like you said, like X-Men and you know, Lost, Game of Thrones, and he sits and turns it off and just puts Schindler's List in. It's like, this is fucking this is you lot have got to be fucking learn. You got to realize what the real world is. Stop fucking losing your head in this post Pochettino bullshit.
That's what he did. Any film,
I was trying to think about the most poignant, most depressing film, and that's what came. Sad, fucking horrendous film that came to my mind to make the point.
That's a good save.
Precious.
Well, no, don't say it's a good save because that makes me sound like I came from
Nightmare on Elm Street. Something like
that. No, it doesn't work as well. Doesn't work as well.
Is that not good?
No, not as well.
Saving Private Ryan.
No.
Saving Private Ryan. Just play the D-Day landing.
The first 10 minutes. First 10 minutes of that.
Scum. Monsters Ball.
Jesus Christ, dear.
What?
If you see,
he's doing it again.
No, Scum and Monsters Ball. If you don't know
you
those,
have to watch Scum. If you're going to live in England, watch fucking Scum.
I'm the daddy
watch
now.
Watch it.
You don't know what that is?
Got no idea.
All right, okay. Wait, after the show, settle down with your missus. Maybe get some popcorn. Put on Scum. And then in a couple of hours, text me and T and ask what we'll talk about the greenhouse scene.
Yeah.
Yeah? Hey. Do you fancy that, T? That'd be a good conversation.
Yeah, mate. You've got to be dumb.
Right. Yeah, Harry Kane has opened up apparently there's conversations about Harry Kane signing a new contract for Tottenham, which seems to be intrinsically linked with what Conte's doing in their future. But the fact that it's out there, that there are some murmurings and it is coming from a reputable source, would suggest that something that we all thought might happen when he didn't get the opportunity to leave. And with our upper trajectory of Conte and Conte obviously inspiring Harry Kane, there are very few managers out there that would be able to inspire Harry Kane. You can imagine his face when listening to Nuno at the beginning of last season. He probably thought, what the fuck? Not only have I been not allowed to leave for Manchester City, but I've also got to listen to Nuno, who you know, for whatever reason.
Shit stepdad.
Yeah, he just carried on with the powder puff girls or whatever it might have been. Mark, what do you think the contract at Tottenham, if Harry Kane was to sign it, would look like? How much money? What kind of length? What do you think it would cost? Like, what are we talking? He's on 250 at the moment, I think, if you believe what is to be reported.
Yeah. It sounds like 250. That's kind of the number that's mooted around.
No, that's what he's on now.
I mean,
but what is he going to be offered?
Sure, do we? It's got to be up there. It's got to be 300 plus. It's got to be, you know, near 350. I think it's got to be a bumper, because if we don't go all out, go balls out, and to try and secure him now, I think as happy as he is, he's not stupid, and he does seem to have kind of. I don't know, he seems to have matured a little bit. You know, he's doing all this stuff kind of off the pitch and that he's trying to establish himself as a bit more of a profile sort of for maybe for longer than what his football career will allow him to be. So, I think he deserves it, man. Like what he's given Spurs, he deserves to be our highest paid player ever. And I think, I mean, is he 30 now? Turning 30. So, but I think it's going to be...
I just want to ask you a question about that.
I don't mean as in he's old, but no. We'll need a. He will look at his career, like how much he's got left, right? And the more money we tie him down to, and the longer contract, the more he will need to be bought out for, and so I think it makes sense for us as well.
Well, the thing is that in terms of length of the contract, which is interesting, if you think, I don't think at this stage you're protecting him from a buyout. If you're thinking about what Harry Kane could be worth to Tottenham in 3 years, you're talking insignificant amounts of money compared to what he has been worth or what he was worth last summer. I think what length would you be happy with, T? If it came out he was on 400k a week, capped, that's the maximum he could earn, and he signed a 4-year deal, would that make you comfortable? T?
I think it's very much in credit in terms of, with the fans and of the club. The Man City thing's been pretty much forgotten about now. So, I think he can probably just do a Roy Keane. He guarantees he's the highest paid player. I think that'll be fair enough.
The thing is that 30 years old now isn't 30 years old 15 years ago or 20 years ago, where you thought like a player's prime is 28, 29. Kane and Son, given the nutrition and how they look after themselves and how fit they are, like 30 is not old. Like 30's, you know, peak. You know, Ronaldo is still doing it at 37. I know that Kane isn't Ronaldo, but that's 7 years off from where Kane is currently. And he's talked about being able to play till he's 40. So he's visualising the idea of playing Premier League football or top level football until 40 years old. I do think this would be the last big contract of his career, and for us to tie him down to Tottenham and up until 34, 35, where he's still going to be, you'd imagine, still be as good as he is now, I'd be comfortable with that. 400 grand a week is a lot. It's something like, that's a contract. So his last contract was worth 62 million across the 6 years. So I don't know. I'm going to butcher the maths, but you know, if you imagine what kind of, if he's earning another 150, it's probably a comparable amount for 4 years. So that's a £60 million commitment to Harry Kane from Tottenham. It's not like just getting him to sign a new contract isn't something that doesn't have an impact on how well we can spend elsewhere. But you can't replace him, right, Mark? He's just if there's any option to get him to sign a new contract, if it is 4 years, then you just take it.
Yeah, I think you do. I think his worth footballing wise to the club it's not irreplaceable. But we would need to work extremely hard, and we'd need to sign probably at least two players. He is so important to us. I think he means a lot for us as a role model as well. And I think for that reason as well. It's not just sentimentality here, by the way, either. That's just saying, oh, you know, he grew up with a club and all that sort of bullshit. It is literally, it makes footballing sense. It makes financial sense. because he does bring in a fucking ton of fans. And I think all those things combined, I mean, we just have to secure him for as long as we possibly can.
I mean,
to your point about Ronaldo as well, I absolutely see Kane playing well into his 30s. He is such a clever guy. He will just adapt his game. But then he's never been, you know, he's not fast. He works hard, but he's not a fast player. You know, Ronaldo had to massively adapt his game. I don't know if Kane has to do the same amount to adapt his game to be a bit, you know, when he gets a bit older.
Well, you drop him into 10.
If anything,
10,
he's adapted. He's been, well, I mean, well, this is the thing. He could actually pull back a little bit. But I'd also argue he has adapted his game. I mean, when was the last, he had more injuries sort of 5-6 years ago than he has at the moment. So there has been a level of adaptation to his game, and I think he'll just continue doing that as he gets older. He's got less touches per game, sort of, at the moment than he did last season. So I'm not saying it's starting already this season from last season, but it will happen.
He looks so comfortable carrying the ball. You know, a young striker like Vardy, you know, or playing off the shoulder, and not that Kane has always been able to drop deep, but it's a young man's game. For a striker to play off the shoulder and pace a centre back, Kane is still, even though he probably lost he's lost a little bit in his pace maybe, but he's so strong and he's sort of drive and his strength and his willingness to beat a player and belief in himself is so significant that he's still carrying the ball brilliantly and making really, you saw the penalty we got against Frankfurt, where he drove into the box and was fouled. You know, it's there. He's still there, and he's a couple of years away from that being a game that he needs to reduce somewhat. And like I say, he could easily drop into a 10 now, and we buy a proper number 9, or he plays next to a more sort of traditional number 9, and just feeds him, and he would still bag 25 goals a season in that role. There's no worries about his age at all, I don't think. And like I say, like the modern game has changed. The longevity of players' careers are going to be significantly improved by just how good nutrition and fitness and training is in the modern era. Just quickly before we go on to the questions, Conte talked about preferring the 3-4-3 in his press conference. And against United, he said he had the options of Lucas Moura and Perisic as forward players, which suggests that Kulusevski isn't going to be fit for that one either. Do you think he's bluffing about that, about using Lucas Moura at Old Trafford with in a free, or adapting Perisic to a free? Do you think he's like a smokescreen for a 3-5-2?
I don't think he's bluffing. I think he probably sees a failure of the 3-4-3 as a failure of him as a manager, because he's so wedded to that philosophy that I could see him trying to do something a bit left field. But as has been said countless amount of times, I just feel that 3-5-2 not only is it an effective formation for Tottenham with our personnel, but it gives us a better bench as well, because you can have, if you do go 3-5-2, you've got Lucas Moura and Perisic as different players off the bench. So it just makes more sense to do that. But we've got, I mean, they're playing two games a week this month, so maybe he's mindful of that in terms of not putting too much pressure on Bissouma. But he was actually very positive about Bissouma after the game. So
he talks about,
I would like to think that he is bluffing.
He talked about Bissouma, you know, in terms of Bissouma being able to understand what was required of him to play for Spurs and in Conte's system. And suddenly we've seen Bissouma being trusted in that midfield once he's come on and playing well. The same thing he said about Jed Spence recently. Obviously, Spurs fans have just been banging on and on about Jed Spence. And we talked about it at length a couple of episodes ago about why he may or may not be playing. But he come off the bench against Everton to make way for Doherty, and it was a similar stuff with Bissouma, just eased him in, and it's quite exciting, the fact that Jed Spence could be a proper player and has been brought to a point where he understands exactly what's expected of him to play for Tottenham. It's an exciting thing. We're going to do a proper preview for the Man United game for our patrons. 30% of the people that listen to the podcast typically become patrons. And if you do that for the price of, like, I don't know, it's like £5 or something like that for a month, we do a preview amongst other shows every single week, don't we? Every game, don't we, Mark, me and you?
Do you? Yeah, it's great joy.
About 30, 40 minutes of preview chat for whatever game's coming up, and obviously we're going to do one for the Man United game. We've got a question here from Zeus. He says, you walk into an airport bathroom and see Conte struggling to put a bag of ket up his bum. Do you grasp him up or help him insert it? T.
What kind of cunt would grasp him up?
Imagine that. Like some sort of clean shirt. Would go, oh, there's drugs in it. Don't matter what you've done for Spurs. Don't matter that you desperately want that ket up your bum. I'm going to grasp you up to airport security and really damage your reputation. Actually, probably ruin your reputation.
I don't know if Zeus is inferring that we put up our bum because Conte can't get it up his bum.
Or would you do that? Would you take? Would you put it up? If you say so. So Conte's bum's just too loose. Just can't get anything up there anymore. Do you smuggle drugs for Conte? Would you do that?
Yeah, I think I'd do. Yeah. If I get caught and I'm in prison, I'll watch. Flav, do you remember back in the days they had these mini TVs that had like aerials on them?
Yeah, of course. And it was so like you didn't have to plug them in.
I'd be watching that in my prison cell. I mean, watch the Spurs win the league at a little 4-inch green TV, you know.
I did that.
And Conte will include me in his victory speech. He says, you know what, I could have gone to prison for the rest of my life, but T, you know, I mean, he jumps in the grenade for me, put the kit up his bum, and fair play, you know. I mean,
he'd look around, my name. He'd look around shocked. He'd look around shocked to go, fuck, I've been caught. And you'd go, shh, shh. Exactly. And you'd come up behind him. Come up behind him, put your finger in his mouth, and then you'd just gently insert the baggie up his bum. That's what you do, hands down, Mark, wouldn't you?
You take the belt off.
Is the only right answer. I love that you went straight to his too loose as well. Like instead of him being too tight.
No, too loose.
But how do we? How would you do that though? Would you take your t-shirt off, rip a sleeve off,
and just spit on your fingers and just whack it up?
Put a little bit of a
nice. yeah, 100%. Just help him out. Do whatever you need. Like do whatever you can for your new stepdad.
What's fucking expected of you, boy?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, he'd be shocked, and you have to make him feel relaxed and just sort of go. Frankie said, "Relax, up it goes."
You just have to brush his hair a little bit, and then he'd tell you not to touch it.
It's very expensive. This hair is very expensive. Don't touch my hair. Just concentrate on the cat. Concentrate on the cat. What was the question? T. You remember you just mentioned sort of retro TVs. Do you remember the ones that weren't buttons? You had to dial it in like a radio.
Yeah.
Remember them?
Yeah.
They were shit, yeah. Weren't they?
Fuck. And they weighed a fucking ton, mate. You know what I mean?
Mark,
you put a TV under your arm now.
Do you know what we're talking about, Mark?
Dial a TV in. I don't think. I don't think the rest of Europe got them.
So imagine. Definitely. How old are you, Mark?
I'm 40 next year.
Fuck, so you should know. So these essentially it was a radio, but imagine you tuned into Radio 1, not on when it was digital, but on like manual, where you turn the dial and it would enable the radio to pick up the broadcast. It was the exact same thing for TV. You could get into all four channels it was at the time, maybe three channels, and you turn the dial and then the picture would just become clear. They were black and white often as well. This is my poor youth. I grew up in a very working class family, so maybe it's just me.
Maybe I was just so poor I didn't even have that TV. Who knows?
There isn't a single poor person in Scandinavia.
You've got loads of radio rentals, mate. You know, pay a bit of money each month and you get a TV in your gaff.
There were TVs outside, out there, right, where you'd put a pound into the TV to make it go. That's true.
That's mad.
Is it mad? That's the life of normal working class people in London back in the day, Mark. Just because you've been brought up in this privileged monk shagging country, that you're
given TV for free to watch all the Scandinavian propaganda directly into your front.
Mark had a fucking plasma in the 90s.
with a laser disc as well.
Laser disc. Well, we never had a laser disc. My dad had one of the first mobile phones in Denmark, though. Car phones, I suppose it was back then. It was before mobile phones.
Do you remember it? Was it on top of a massive battery, a massive brick battery?
Massive box.
So my dad had one of those. My dad, because he worked for a central heating engine in a company called Dalkia or Benham, I think, something like that. And all of the drivers in these transits would have these mobile phones, and they weighed about as much as a suitcase that you take on holiday, but they were sort of small, and they'd sit on this big, massive battery, and there'd be an actual phone that sort of, you know, the typical phone receiver, household phone with a sort of extendable wire. And I remember this time where he got a call from work, and we were driving home, and he was on this phone as he was driving. Back then, there were no laws in mobile phones because no one had them. Just people at work who needed a phone on the go would have these fucking things. And he was lifting it up to his ear. Imagine that the old school phones like in your house. It was that kind of phone. And he was driving this transit van. And as he was talking, the wire of the phone was getting caught up in the steering column. And my dad is quick to frustration. He's a man of a very short temper. And the way he deals with having a short temper is freaking out and punching things. I remember driving through Crouch End and he was punching his steering wheel because this phone cord got caught up in it. That's my childhood. Thanks for making me relive that, boys.
You know, there's kids today that don't know what a landline is. Like, you know, and not just like 5-year-olds, like proper teenagers don't fucking know.
No,
what
I saw this TikTok the other day and it says, ask if you're a millennial, ask your children this. Do you know what it means to burn a CD? And I asked the kids and they like, I don't know what you're fucking talking about. Like, obviously, they went to the obvious things like, setting fire to a CD. Why would that be useful? Yeah, fuck them. Kids these days, they don't know anything, do they? Patrick Emmy says, now that we have forgiven Kane, is Ricky TFC, if Ricky TFC did make Spag Bowl for Harry and he said he didn't like it, would he return to hate? Ross Joyce also follows up with, most fans have forgot the ill will towards Kane after the failed City move. However, will all that be undone if he breaks Greaves' record in the current away shirt and force us to look back at the monstrosity on that monstrosity forever? Shit away shirt. But have you completely and utterly forgiven Kane, boys? Tico.
Forgiven, but not forgotten.
I haven't forgotten either.
I'm up for something collapsing on him. You know, that's kind of my thing. That's kind of my go-to insult now. Yeah. I've forgiven him. I don't know, maybe his mansion, you know, this year is like, has he got any tattoos on him? You can't even see if it's his arm or not, if it's a child's arm. But, you know, this is his arm out of the rubble. It's like same, like, fuck you, what you did about Man City, mate, you know? But
sign a new contract. Sign a new contract and absolutely everything is forgiven, in my opinion.
I think new contract and a few trophies would do it.
You can't hold the trophy thing against him. That's what all the other. That's what other clubs fans do. That's a team thing. But if he signs a new contract and it's, I think it's a time to forgive him.
It's not holding it against him. It's just that you got someone like Danny Thomas, who's a Spurs legend, because of he was part of a team that won something. It'd be nice if Kane had that. You know what I mean?
He actually missed the penalty as well, didn't he? The team that won something.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, his career cruelly ended by Gavin Maguire. Never forget that shit. Disgraceful.
I don't know what you're talking about. Jason Williams says, has Skip's injury cost him a place in Conte's plans moving forward? He was vital to Spurs' success before the injury, and Bentancur, Højbjerg and Bissouma all seem to be ahead of him now. He'll get his time. He's been coming on as a sub in the last couple of games. Conte waxed lyrical about him last season. It's just about wait and see, isn't it? I don't think it's cost him a place. Do you, Mark? It's just
was it what
it cost him in the short term. It's cost him a place, but he rates him.
Was he? Oh, he's a, Skip's a good player, but was he vital to Spurs' success? I think, honestly,
there are some statistics out there about how our win ratio with him in the side was something like 78%.
Across like five games or something. And it's fine. Look, it's fine. I'm not
saying you're just bumming off Højbjerg earlier because he comes from Denmark.
He's your Højbjerg. There we are.
No, that's what you were doing. He's the second best player in Great Britain. Ah, and now Skip apparently wasn't good for Spurs, is what you're saying.
Skip was good, but he wasn't vital to our success. He just wasn't. Like Son and Kane are. Skip isn't. Wasn't. Maybe in the future, but he wasn't. But it's fine.
Good player.
He's a good player. You love him, so it's fine. Again, that's in my contract as well. I have to mention Skip's a very good player. But I don't know, the crux of Jason's question, I suppose, is will we see him sort of back in the side, and will he be played as much as he was played? I think he was played that much as well, because there wasn't kind of a massive upgrade on him
back then.
He needed a little bit of time to kind of get used to.
He was good. But he's an option. He's depth at the moment, and that's what you need.
Absolutely. He is. I think he will need time. We need to remember, number one, how young he is still, how long these injuries take, and several injuries like backed up.
He hasn't played since January. Like, he hasn't started since January. So massive.
It's going to take him some time. So let's give him the time. Let's talk about. It's not that we can't talk about him to like put him under pressure, but.
Beneficial to him that Bentancur, Højbjerg and Bissouma are ahead of him right now, because it means you don't have to rush him. You don't have to throw him into mental games where he might push himself too far and this mad injury that he's had reoccurs.
And with the expectation that we put on, expectation carries weight. So when he, like you say, if he plays and he starts playing, we're not going to look at him and go, oh, our season depends on whether Skippy comes back and you know is crucial, quote unquote. Again, if he comes on and he's had a few cameos, but we've not talked really about Skip's performance outside of he'll be great, he's a great player when he comes back, or all that sort of stuff. And that's a good place to be.
Okay, let's move on to Dr. Chock's question. This is, one day Sonny will leave in hopes of lessening the pain. I'm wondering if we should hope he does something morally dubious, or is he just too good tea? What kind of thing would you want to happen to Son so it stops the pain from when he actually has to leave us and not play for Tottenham anymore?
Oh, God. I feel like I've been set up to say something awful again.
If he came out as a nonce after... He's done all the good stuff already.
I don't know, maybe he leaves and has an Eduardo sort of leg break, you know, so we don't have to watch him play for anyone else. You know,
I mean,
just see the shin snap. And
no, I wouldn't wish
just,
that
you know, can't play for us, can't play for anyone, you know.
I'd rather him be a nonce and have that happen to him.
Yeah, I don't know. I think being a nonce is a bit too easy to kind of go to.
It's a bit too obvious.
Yeah, it's a bit too obvious. We'll have to find something new. We'll have to find a new scandal for people.
I don't
care about tax dodging. That doesn't bother me. I think that's the accountant's fault. But
I think
find something more.
I think we're going to get the best years out of Son, and it doesn't matter what he does
we
afterwards.
Have.
We have probably, and maybe there is still more to come. I think there is. But whatever it is, by the end of his contract at Spurs, and it may be a world where he signs another one. We'd have had the best. So if he goes off to, you know, play in La Liga or wherever it might be, then I don't think it would be too painful. Anyway, let's round this podcast off with a question from Joss. Is every time your mum noshes Conte off, we're guaranteed a win. Three game weeks time, we're ahead of the scum. Would you send your mum round his gaff every week or just as and when? Every game, even League Cup games. I would have sent my mum to Marine when we played them last year.
Every single game, you know.
He's followed this up for context. It's Flav's mum. Is that necessary, Josh? Is that necessary? I thought we all got the point. So how many times did you send my mum round to Conte to nosh him off for a win Mark.
You know,
or T. Or,
is, no, he, Mark. Is he? I send him around. I send him around.
You send my mum. You said my mum to commit an act on Conte every single game. Is that what you're saying?
Conte, Pep before his Arsenal game.
More players. All right.
Klopp before the Arsenal game.
Managers just, not even just, nothing to do with Spurs. Just send my mum willy nilly across. And she's got to get trained as well,
she's
mate.
Retired by now, so she's got. We do a rota. I do a great. You know, I used to do rotas when
you
I.
Know
got
what you're not thinking about, Mark?
Get my Excel spreadsheet out,
Mark. You're not thinking. She's got to get trained everywhere, right? You got to feed her. She's got to. There's work involved. It's not just she doesn't magically appear in front of Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp.
See. You know, I'm quite fond of one of the Lime Uber electric bicycles. I could just sort of give her my Uber login, and she could just get on a bike.
She's 70 years old.
Neutral.
What?
Yeah, exactly. It's great. Well, I mean,
neutral as well.
Yeah.
What about my mum's mouth? Forget the very fucking. Who gives a shit about the environment? We're talking about my mum. And you want to put a 7 year old woman on a
bike? Just take him out.
You want to put a 7 year old woman. Who's paid her dues, a nurse. She's worked for the NHS for 40 years. You want to put her on a bike? No, you want to put her on a bike to go and see Jurgen Klopp in the hope that Liverpool get a victory against Arsenal.
It's an electrical bike. She doesn't need to cycle very much.
She's 70. It's uncomfortable.
Bye. I feel terrible because I've met his mum and
she's a lovely woman.
She's a wonderful woman.
All right, that'll do for the Fighting Cock podcast. Very, very much, Mark and T.
Thank you.
Spurs are on the up. Yep. We're on the up. Everyone's on the up. Fucking up the Spurs.
Kane has scored fucking 9 goals in 10 games and it's a bloody footnote. This has got up. You know, fuck Haaland.
What was good yesterday was that Haaland looks super...
Fuck Haaland, fucking Norwegian fraud.
He looked ordinary. Like he looked like a normal striker, which was interesting to see. Anyway, fuck that. I'm going to go and make dinner for the kids. I'll speak to you later, boys.
Bye. Bye.
Network.